I'm Representative Jenny Graham from the 6th Legislative District. I am a wife, a mother. I'm an Army veteran, and I also have been a blue-collar worker for a good portion of my life and a former business owner of a few small businesses.
Now, I have to say, I was watching some videos on TVW yesterday, and there was one about legislators that showed a little bit of footage of you walking up to Jeff Holley's office and introducing yourself. And I thought, wow, that's Jenny probably from, what, 3, 4, 5 years ago, maybe when you were doing some advocacy work in Olympia.
Yeah, and that was when I was, just an average, everyday citizen that cared very much about the safety of our community. So I was working with Jeff on child sexual assault statutes of limitations to reform that law. And it was absolutely horrific at the time. So we were successful in that. And little did I know that a few years later, I would actually be a state legislator, person that ran for that seat, now a state legislator that reached over to push the button when we actually eliminated the statute of limitation.
So I was going to ask you about that. Tell me about that first term and the things you were working on and what you're proud of.
Well, the first term, there are so many things to learn. I think that for me, the first thing that comes to my mind is the many conversations that I, when I was running for office, I had conversations at the doorsteps of people in my district and businesses, and hearing the things that mattered to them and their stories and their struggles. So that was freshly in my mind because, you know, I really did mean that. I told them that I'm taking you to Olympia with me. And they were, in the back of my mind, I would hear their stories when different issues would come up. So even though they weren't there physically, they were definitely there mentally with me. But things, taxes, the business owners that were struggling with, wondering how they were going to be able to keep their doors open, or the ones that already were losing their businesses, or the young families that were dreaming of starting a business, but they had so many roadblocks preventing them from doing it. All of these things were in my mind. Safe schools and opportunities that would be coming up for different things in the future. There are so many different directions that we can go. Another thing that's coming to my mind, and this goes back to the death penalty. That first session was really hard because the death penalty came up, and not only did the death penalty come up as far as we're going to eliminate it to save money, they introduced a bill the same session saying we're going to eliminate life without the possibility of parole to save money. So that was particularly frustrating because what that translates into is no matter what crime you commit in Washington state, no matter how horrendous it is, there would be no death penalty, no life without the possibility of parole. And at that point in time, it was me and another legislator that were fighting to keep a killer from Spokane that, my kids went to the same high school. He was up for parole. And it was amazing to me that he'd committed a murder of Linda Strait, went to North Central High School. He kidnapped her, he raped her, he strangled her, and he threw her in the river. So he got away with that for 24 years. And then he kidnapped a couple of other 8-year-olds in the valley, and one got away, one didn't. So this gentleman was serving time for that and just about ready to get out when a cold case DNA hit caught him. And he actually was tried and convicted for the murder of Linda Strait. Well, he came up for parole April 10th of 2019, I think it was. I believe it was 2019. But anyway, he was up for parole, and I was laying there, you know, it was during session, and I'm laying there at night, you know, after really, really rigorous days, thinking to myself, this guy's going to get out, and he's going to come back to my district, and there's going to be another family that's going to be on, you know, the receiving end of the evil that this man, you know, that he dishes out. He had no problem killing, you know, somebody's daughter. He meant to kill another one, thought that he did. And that animal's not going to change their spots. And he had no remorse. So they ended up keeping him. He's still incarcerated at this point. And the sad part is, you know, that when I was looking into this, he was able to be let out early instead of his full sentence. So what they've done now at this point, because he wouldn't cooperate, is now he's got the full sentence that he was originally given. So that I think is very frustrating on the side of the victims' families. And it's frustrating when you're that family member and, you know, you're told, well, this, you know, is really unfair, that families have to get brought in and go through this trauma when we're talking about, you know, early release situations. And, you know, I have to ask, you know, why are we doing that? You know, why is the sentence not the sentence? Life in Washington State doesn't mean life. And it's not fair to the victims, and it's not fair to the families that have very little resources for them. So that seems to be a theme that not only last session and the session before that as a member of the Public Safety Committee, that's kind of a reoccurring theme that I've been really fighting for balance in the justice system, as far as there are resources for individuals that have committed a crime or incarcerated. And yes, if they are somebody that, you know, takes responsibility for what they've done, they do the hard work to change, and they get out and they don't commit more crimes, I am that legislator that will absolutely be there to support them. You want them to succeed. But I'm also on the other side of this, as far as if they're that person that isn't going to change, doesn't want to change, and they don't have any reason to have to change because the justice system doesn't hold them accountable, then they get out and they make more victims, and then there's no resources or very little resources for those families. And for me, it's about trying to prevent those crimes from happening when we recognize that that person is dangerous and they should be managed.
So I wonder if you can clarify for me the legislation that you were part of when it came to crime victims, what you were referring to with Jeff Holy a few minutes ago. Can you just sort of spell that out for listeners?
The gist of it was that when it wasn't hard, it was not hard if somebody sexually assaulted a child to keep them quiet for a year. So kids had to report in most cases. There were a few cases that they didn't have to report within a year, but in most cases they did. And if they didn't, regardless of what the reason was, as in my case, which is how I ended up getting, you know, on this path to begin with, is that in my child sexual assault case, I had more evidence in my old case than a lot of the new ones did, but because my life was threatened as a child and I didn't have the support to be able to get any help, that nobody talks to the kids about child or the statutes of limitations. So when I was finally in a safe place to be able to start looking into this, I didn't realize that there were records in my sister's death investigation files that proved that it was not just my word against his. And there were undeniable records. So it dawned on me at that point in time that there were that there were some people that were not getting a fair hand in our justice system. So I worked, and my goal really was not to try to put anybody in jail. My goal was to draw that line to say, if you rape a child, then you need to be looking over your shoulder. That time shouldn't be on your side just because you can threaten a child to get away with it, you know, for a year. If that evidence is there, then you may be held accountable, and it's to protect others. You know, if they can't seem to not do that, then we have to step in and do something to protect kids that can't protect themselves. So we were able to do what I thought, you know, was fair. Obviously, I was trying for there to be no statute of limitations if you had the proof like I did. And we were successful to get it to everybody had till their 30th birthday. And that also they had to start prosecution within a year. And that to me was fair. And they also included child pornography. The prosecutors worked with me on that, and they asked, look, if you're looking at this, would you consider adding this into it? So there's no statutes of limitations for child pornography, but it's the same thing. You know, if they can prove who did it and they find out who did it, they have a year to commence prosecution. And I believe that was fair. So finding something fair really mattered to me.
Okay. Let me ask you about another criminal justice issue. There's a lot of call now for police reform sort of related to what happened to George Floyd and to other folks who have been harmed in police custody. Where do you feel is the right level for that, local, state levels? And what do you think about those calls? Are there things that you think that should be banned or talked about as the legislature reconvenes?
Well, I'm glad that you're asking that question. This is something obviously that, you know, is very important to me. And I've, like everybody else, have been watching this very closely. And there's zero, I have not met a single person yet that doesn't look at what happened to Mr. Floyd as being absolutely horrific. There is no arguing that. It was wrong. And they are being held accountable by their justice system. And then I also look that we had the Otto Zemm case here. So when I look at Chicago and I look at some of these other places, you know, that have been in the news, I recognize that we had Otto Zemm that happened long before that. So Spokane, they have already taken steps. There's already been training that's been going on. And, you know, they've gotten awards and things like that. Should this be something that we continue to talk about as far as what efforts can be made to do a better job? Always. I don't think that ever ends. We should always be looking for ways to be able to do things better. So I want to bring this back because this is something that I've been very public about. And it's tough with the Black Lives Matter and everything happening right now, that there, you know, that if you bring up the, well, we need to, you know, look into law reform. And I'm asking the question, what does society expect from law enforcement in these certain situations? So I believe that they should be at the table when we're having this conversation about what is expected. The other thing, though, that's not being talked about is when I've watched the violence that's climbed, and it's not just law enforcement, it's teachers that have been calling me, it's nurses that have been getting assaulted at work. We need to have a conversation about civility and what is expected from the public as well, you know, in the other side of that, because that's where you get balance. And something has happened that somehow or another, it's become acceptable if somebody's upset to show that anger, and whether it's going up to an officer, a teacher, a nurse, a firefighter, and screaming in their face, spitting at them, hitting them, biting them. I mean, when did we get to the point that that's acceptable? because a lot of them, you know, aren't being charged for that. So I think that's a good place to start, is what's acceptable on both sides of this, as when we're looking to try to calm down the anxiety and the rage that's associated with that. Because if we don't find a way to come together at the table and talk about this, it's going to affect us. We already have officers here in Spokane and Seattle and, you know, a lot of other places that are applying for transfers for any other job other than law enforcement. They're retiring. They're quitting. They're not signing up to do this job to begin with. And we're already 50th in the nation per capita for law enforcement. So, you know, it's real for me because I live in the city of Spokane, and I've actually experienced having somebody on my roof at midnight and calling 911, which is what we're expected to do, and hearing the, okay, we'll be there. I live in city limits, and it was half hour later and nobody was here. Called again, half hour later, nobody's here. It took 2 hours for the police to get here. And that's not a dig on them. They didn't have anybody to send. So my husband and I had to confront three gang members in our yard by ourselves. So this is a real issue to me. And it's very frightening, you know, when you look at what's happened, I believe in Missouri with the couple who was put in a position, they called 911, the police couldn't come. So now they're having to defend themselves and their property, you know, from angry people. The angry people that broke the law aren't being charged with any crime, but the homeowners that were on private property that didn't commit a crime, they're the ones now that are under scrutiny. So that's a scary scenario when you think about it.
So how do you feel about this kind of this society-wide debate about masks and people confronting each other, both sides confronting each other about, oh, you should be wearing a mask or you shouldn't be wearing a mask? It's sort of along the line of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes. And that comes back to civility. And I am, you know, again, this is another great question. So as a legislator, this is something that, you know, I am very definitely involved with because I care, obviously, about the safety of our community. When I go out, if I'm outside by myself, no, I'm not wearing a mask. You don't have to. That's in the mandate. It doesn't make any sense. But if I'm going into a store, then, you know, if I've got to wear a mask for 20 minutes, so what? You know, it's no big deal. Fine. And I understand that it may not totally stop the spread, but it definitely stops it. If you cough or something, you may still have particles that come out the sides from what I'm understanding, but you won't get the projection as much. And it's happened to me. I was in the store, I have allergies, and I sneezed. The particles stayed in my mask. I still got the looks, but I think the other side of this that I'm looking at, and it is so very important. I've also been public about, let's please stop mask shaming, that it shouldn't be selfless versus selfish, because, and I'll explain why. There are some individuals, and I've been fielding the calls from constituents that have legitimate reasons why they cannot or should not wear a mask. And what this is causing now, and I'm trying desperately to find, you know, some answers as far as how we're going to handle this, that I'd had a constituent that called. He has legitimate reasons. He's somebody that has an EBT card. And this also affects people with SNAP cards, that if they are not able to go into the store, the option for them to use curbside service doesn't exist, and they can't have groceries delivered because they don't take the EBT cards. And it has to do with fraud. So these now are individuals that, besides the fact that they have a legitimate reason, and if they're not wearing a mask, they're automatically put into the category of, you're selfish, you know, you're irresponsible, you don't care, there's other reasons. There was another individual that was wearing one of the face shields, but the health department told the employer, you can't do that. They have to have a mask on. They can't wear the face shield. Well, it turns out she was smothered as a child, and there's women that have been raped. So post-traumatic stress in some of those cases is very real. And, you know, I'm concerned about what this is causing for the store owners and the managers that are being pitted against their customers, and the public safety scenario that this is creating, when I'm hearing from the store owners that if there's somebody, a few people in their store that are not wearing a mask, there are people that are angry enough that they're taking carts and pushing them into their employees. There was another woman that was working and fainted. She hit her head. And this was because she was wearing a mask. There are other scenarios. This, we need to be looking at the full picture. And even when you look at the CDC, because I have really taken this to heart and been trying so very hard to get as much information as I can to make good decisions and be able to support, Governor Inslee or anybody else in as we move forward together, trying to work through this to prevent the spread or slow it. We're never going to prevent it. But anyway, it's just really important that when the CDC, if there's a search bar for Washington CDC, and you can type in whatever question you'd like, but I, was exploring that, what should, if somebody is in the store not wearing a mask, should I say anything? And according to the Washington CDC, it says, no, you should not. You should make sure that you're wearing your mask, that you are socially distancing, that you're washing your hands, and that you are taking responsibility for your personal health and safety. Because you don't know that other person may not have, a legitimate reason, and to villainize them is not right to do that. So, and I, talking to somebody, because I went to multiple different stores, and talked to the manager, well, what are you going to do in this situation? And one of the managers said, well, we guess we're going to handle this just like if it were a service dog situation, that if somebody brings a service dog, we can ask, is that a service dog? But there might be, you kind of start getting in a gray line area, what service does the dog perform? But you're not allowed to ask about, any of their medical stuff, because they can be fined. And there's also the ADA concerns that come in. So what I'm hearing from business owners is I've heard from some that have said, look, I just can't, I'm not going to be able to open because I can't win. I risk being fined if somebody's not wearing a mask, or having my license or my liquor license taken away, because there's a line that somebody can call, but they don't gather the information. They just say that somebody's not wearing their mask. So they say, I can't win that way. And then they have the other individuals that, with the proclamation that Governor Inslee said, if you are exempt, just let the business owner know, and they'll handle it as far as letting you shop. But there's there's a gray area there, because I think there's a lot of fear that's involved with this. So now they face, are they going to now get sued because people with disabilities are supposed to be able to have equal access to goods and services? So could lawsuits be coming as a result of this? There's a huge possibility that they might. So I have to look at that from a state standpoint. Business owners are certainly, looking at that, saying, what do we do? There's conflicting information. So I have honestly been working so hard to try to get those answers and, to bring those to the forefront. there, we have requested a mask work group to talk about some of these issues and hopefully get them handled quickly. But I would say, you know, that we need to also, you know, focus on kindness, that there are situations that are being created in which I had somebody that communicated, they were downtown Spokane on a site. It was 90 degrees outside. They were by themselves on a sidewalk with nobody around them at all. And there was somebody that came from across the other side of the street screaming to the top of their lungs to put their mask on so they didn't kill somebody. And I don't believe that that was something that the person, you know, was meaning, you know, to be mean. To me, that's an action that's taken from somebody that is scared. That's fear. But we still have to have civility, you know, along with that. And that's kind of an example of being a little much. And, you know, for the people that are angry in the stores, this is again now putting, you know, their employees in a bad situation. So that's been coming up, that business owners are saying, hey, you know, we're going to go by what the state is saying, and we're not going to put our employees in harm's way on this issue. And they really shouldn't be put in that position. So I think we've got some work left to do on this issue. And I'm really looking forward to working with other representatives now that some of these issues have been brought, you know, to me. I'm doing my very best to find balance here, where, because this virus isn't going away. We're going to be dealing with this for a while. So we do need to find a way to be able to cohabitate and everybody take care of their personal health and, you know, move forward in a civil way. Because otherwise we're in trouble, I think.